Good morning and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And boy, am I glad to hear my next guest's voice on these airwaves. Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Hey, good morning, Dr. Craig. How are you doing, my friend?
Good morning, Earl. Always great to hear your voice as well over the airwaves
on the phone. You know, Dr. Craig, it's been a while. There's so much going on. I have abdicated, what I should be doing, and that's making sure we have you on to keep us informed at such a critical juncture, not only at this time in the state, and nationally. So, we're up against so many things. You've been in so many battles. You and I have been in so many battles. But I don't know, Robert, if the ones that we are in now, there's so many of them, and all of them so critically important to us. Like, where do you want to begin?
I was thinking you might want to know where we should start. I would just say they're not as disconnected, all of the challenges and threats. And
well, let's start here.
We think they are.
Well, let's start here. Let's start with the fact that the elections are around the corner, and we still have Republicans trying to prevent people from their right to vote.
Yes. So you have, for the first time in history, I mean, we didn't have such thing as a Republican form of government, representative government, until this country was founded. Never had a large-scale, quote-unquote, democracy. And it wasn't a multiracial democracy then. We had a failed experiment during Reconstruction. We were briefly a multiracial democracy after the Civil War. But it really wasn't achieved until the 1960s with the Voting Rights Act and its implementation, and now it is at risk again. So it was much more fragile than people thought. And we have, for the first time in history, at a major democracy, a wealthy nation where its conservative party, every functioning democracy in the world that is healthy has a conservative party. But the others in Western Europe and the democratic Asian countries all have conservative parties that are bought into the democratic process. And the miracle, it was considered a miracle of the 18th century, of one side losing an election and handing over power peacefully. And we saw last night with the shocking report of the January 6th Commission on primetime TV and on every major network except Fox, that we had a president who led a conspiracy to steal an election. And that's his word, but it was President Trump who tried to stay in power after losing an election fair and square, and that is an ongoing conspiracy. And part of the problem, Earl, as you and I know, is that a lot of folks didn't wake up until it was a riotous mob storming the Capitol, the citadel of our democracy. But we know it started much earlier. We know the voter suppression laws in Wisconsin came in full force under Scott Walker, and that he rigged the legislature with gerrymandered maps that are guaranteed to produce an undemocratic outcome. That is, no matter what the popular vote is, Republicans have a supermajority. And so it has been coming for a long time, and just people are beginning to wake up to it, but a lot of people are still not awake to it. It is like we're sleepwalking through history. And I would just add, Earl, democracy is not just healthy to the extent it has the mechanisms, that is fair voting, everyone is voting, it's a vote that is the popular will, and then leaders abide by the will of the voters. And that we have a system set up where, say, things like the Wisconsin State Legislature actually reflect the voters and not the way politicians can draw the maps to benefit themselves for just one party. But the other part of democracy is it has to deliver for people. And there's another existential threat for democracy, that is, it isn't working. It isn't addressing our major challenges. And so people are rational. A young African-American man, for example, on the north side of Milwaukee, who doesn't feel like he or she has a whole lot of life prospects or opportunities, why are they going to think that voting's all that important? Like government is going to do anything to improve their lot, to improve the lot of their families? They'd be rational not voting, which of course perpetuates the problem, right?
You know, Dr. Craig, you and I, and some in this listening audience, really remember when, you know, a lot of these things came into vogue, and they began. And we're rooted in our state, and from the Paul Ryans and Rance Priebuses and on and on, those folk helped create that along with conservative talk radio, and I remember them working to bring in voter ID and all of these other things that we saw. They rose and they made it all the way to the presidency of the United States. They were able to get them to all buy into it, and that cancer spread all over this nation. And it's still there. And so when you talk to people about voting and they continue to argue and do everything within their power in the representative government to prevent people from voting. You know, Dr. Craig, how is that democracy?
Well, it's not. And what's shocking is you have an entire political party, by the way, which is funded very generously by corporate America. So they get off way too scot-free. You understand that the supposedly respectable people who people want to call themselves job creators actually are behind this as well and don't believe in the basic principles of the country. And so it's a major risk, but once you have a party that is clearly willing to operate on that basis, then you have to defeat them with what democracy is left. And fortunately, it is not all gone by any stretch of the imagination yet, but it's very threatened, especially in 2022 and then 2024, if a Trump or a Trump-like person becomes president. But we need to win elections. And the challenge now is that there's a lot of bad fortune right now. That is to say, mostly because of the pandemic and Putin's invasion of Ukraine, and the pandemic is what caused the supply chain problems and disruptions in the economy. They just announced for the last year we had 8.5% inflation, the highest in 40 years, and that is the top public issue. And the Republicans don't have a solution, Earl. They're just saying blame Biden, blame Biden, blame Biden. And you'll see that on the attack ads, how Ron Johnson is trying to get himself reelected again, despite being an insurrectionist U.S. senator who didn't believe in COVID-19 and doesn't even believe it's his role to try to make sure jobs come here instead of to South Carolina with the post office contract with Oshkosh Truck, that they could pull it off, and then they will snuff out even more of democracy. So there are a lot of people fighting. It's not, we don't want to make it too dire, right? In other words, and we did win the 2020 election. There is every reason to believe if the Democrats can get better unified that we can fight this off. But Democrats need to both do what's necessary to have, they don't always seem to have as a whole group, the courage to stand up to what's going on. You see that with the concern whether Biden's attorney general, Merrick Garland, will even prosecute for the obvious insurrection that was laid out brilliantly Thursday night by the January 6th committee. But we have to also make government deliver for people. And that's what FDR did the last time people began to believe democracy couldn't work during the Great Depression. There was a real risk of that. People forget in the early 1930s. And what people forget is the New Deal is what made us forget that government democracy worked and saved the country and saved people from starvation. And we need to do that again. But this election, it's very threatening given that inflation is the top issue and it's easy just to throw the current party out when even when the other party has no solutions, is deliberately not offering solutions because then they might be critiqued.
So Dr. Craig, let's do this. Let's begin, because there's so many important, elections going on. Let's talk about the fact that Citizen Action has just officially, through their support behind your good friend and mine, Mandela Barnes, who is running to become the nominee for the Democratic Party at the United States Senate, and eventually to run head and head with a nondescript. Why am I forgetting his name? Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson.
Oh, you're talking about our insurrectionist senator.
Yeah. How could I forget Ron Johnson? You know, let's do this. We've got to go to a break. And I want you to, talk about, why you've and your organization has made the decision to support Mandela Barnes. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. On the line is Roger Craig, Executive Director, Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, my good friend, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Before we went to break, Dr. Craig, we were talking about the fact that Citizen Action has endorsed your good friend of mine, Mandela Barnes. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about why. Did we lose Dr. Craig?
Yeah, no, thank you. No, I'm here. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I was having trouble unmuting myself, so I had a technical moment myself on my little phone. But anyway, for those listeners not familiar with Citizen Action Wisconsin, we're a statewide membership organization, grassroots, and we have membership chapters we call organizing co-ops. Spread across the state in five major regions, including here in Southeast Wisconsin. And so when we have a board of directors that makes the final decision, but it is not a small matter for us to get an endorsement in a U.S. Senate race. I mean, everyone is, or say something like a governor's race, particularly when we have a very competitive primary, and depending on where you want to cut off the line, four or five highly competitive candidates. And so this is a very talented field. There are very strong candidates in the Democratic primary, and they all competed strongly for our endorsement. So and there's much merit about each candidate. So I just want to say that I think we'll have a strong candidate even if Mandela is not able to win the primary. But so really, it was an endorsement that is about Mandela and what he brings to the table, as opposed to saying that we are opposed to all the other candidates. And this is a primary, and so we will see which candidate comes out on top. There are two candidates who are self-funded, who have the most money to spend. Theoretically, that would be Alex Lazary, the president of the Bucks, and State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski. Sarah Godlewski is a former member of ours in Northwest Wisconsin, in our Northwest Wisconsin organizing co-op. But Mandela Barnes is here in Southeast Wisconsin, and he's a former member of our board. But the fundamental reasons are that I've known Mandela since he first appeared on the scene. And he appeared on the scene not as a politician, but as a social justice organizer. And I remember him being very present at meetings and very friendly. I saw him everywhere, just trying to get his first organizing job. And we've known him ever since. worked with him, so we know his values. We know he was born and raised on the north side of Milwaukee to union parents who were salt of the earth. In fact, his dad is still a strong member of our organization, CIS National Wisconsin. And you've probably met Mr. Barnes, Mandela. He's a wonderful man.
Know him well.
Yeah. And just always full of positive energy. And so, and Mandela, we think he's right. We test them, and we have a very advanced platform. We focus especially on healthcare and on addressing the climate crisis in a way that also improves economic equality dramatically. And we also defending democracy, but as far as proactive issues. And Mandela did very well. And in addition to all of that and his eloquence, he's a very good speaker. He would add a great deal of diversity to a very undiverse U.S. Senate, which is disproportionately white, male, and millionaire. He's none of those things. And he'd be only the 13th African-American ever to be elected to the U.S. Senate. And that includes all the senators under Reconstruction, we had a number of them then, and then it ended with Jim Crow. And he would either be the third or fourth in the current U.S. Senate, depending on whether Reverend Raphael Warnock, the senator from Georgia, is reelected. He is up for reelection. And so it would be huge that way. We also think, if you're just thinking about the election, that what Governor Evers brings to the table, because the top of the ticket will be the Democratic nominee for the Democratic Party, with the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate, and the Democratic nominee for governor, which will be Governor Evers. Governor Evers moves in the very center lane and is going to try to get kind of moderate swing voters, which there are actually less and less of if you study elections closely, which we do, and the evolution of American and Wisconsin politics. Really, the problem is that, particularly in the Trump era, but started earlier than this, elections have been more about turning out your base, people who support you but may not vote. And unfortunately, the Trump model, and that's what Ron Johnson's model is, that is really turning up the hate and the othering and the fear, right? And the does ramp up turnout for in their elections. And so we need to answer that. And we think Mandela Barnes has the best chance to ignite a lot of the young people and the people of color who might otherwise sit out this election. And that is critical because Ron Johnson, if he can replicate what Trump did twice in Wisconsin, will get massive turnout. The reason, Mandela, that polls show what 8 points off in Wisconsin in 2016 and 2020 is because they undercounted what Trump's actual vote would be because he revved his side up so much. So we can't just throw it away. You could argue that a combination of Mandela Barnes, who is lieutenant governor under Tony Evers now, and Tony Evers, is the ideal ticket both to drive turnout and to reach whatever's left of kind of the moderate swing voters who would vote for a very moderate Democrat like Governor Evers. Now, let's end on this. I've said a little more than I wanted to, Earl, and that is one of the things I want to call out is that Mandela is for the Thrive Act, which is a Senate act, which is the only serious bill out there on both addressing the climate crisis, so we don't have runaway climate change. We need to cut emissions almost in half by 2030, but do it in a way that opens up the economy and makes it more equitable and eliminates the huge income inequalities that have developed over the last 50 years. And so that is a real test for us, and Mandela fully embraces the Thrive Act, so we know what kind of senator he'll be. He'll be supporting what really needs to happen to change to change our country for the better.
I have to tell you, Robert, I've known, like you, have known Mandela for a long time. I'm really still in awe that we're talking about him at this very tender age of 35 or somewhere, wherever it is, right there, becoming a United States Senator. It shows the intellect of the young man, the commitment, the direction. I've supported him from the onset. Every time I was on air anywhere, from the first time he ran for office, I always had him on, supported him. And I'm really just, it's unbelievable when I hear even national Democrats talking about Mandela and pushing for Mandela to become one of a handful of the most powerful people in the world. That's amazing to me.
This is where the American dream is not dead, right?
Right.
You know, it was always a lie that there weren't qualified people who, you know, represented a much broader part of this country, where why we couldn't have a U.S. Senate that looked like the country, or couldn't have corporate CEOs look more like the country with all of its diversity. And so we still have a system anyway where, even though it's hard, someone can just rise to the top who just comes from the north side of Milwaukee, Mandela, right? He's done this. Obviously, he's benefited from the fact that his parents worked hard and had unions. That's what we need to restore unions, right? So he had a stable upbringing. But now, at least within the modern Democratic Party, he has a fighting chance to rise up, though he does have to beat a couple candidates who have the wealth to self-fund their campaign, which he certainly can't do, and none of us can do. And I can hazard a guess that probably few, if any, of your listeners could spend $4 million, $5 million, or one candidate, Alex Lesry, spent $8 million, I think, on this election already. That most people don't have that privilege. So it's great that Mandela, who has raised about $4 million, which is hard work.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, my good friend, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Dr. Craig, I wanted to, you mentioned the governor's race. And in all of the time that Governor Evers, the short period of time that Governor Evers has been in office, he's done an absolutely spectacular job of keeping the state in against all odds, because he hasn't gotten much help from people on the right. And he, at any other time in any other situation, Governor Evers would be a lock, a man who's done the things that he's done and steadied things in this state. But clearly he is up against those folk who are going to do everything within their power to lie about his record and to bring in three people who, if you put them all together, would not have the same kind of commitment to people and humanity that the governor has. And really, to be honest with you, in the short period of time that he's been the governor, has grown into that position. What do you say about that?
Well, I mean, there's a stark contrast between Governor Evers, who I think is, he's in the moderate lane of the party. We're in the progressive lane, but we both sides need to work together in order to have any kind of governing power, right?
Right.
So I would say I would go be bolder than he has been. I wouldn't have signed the tax cut, for example, the Republican, because it was regressive in the state budget. But there's no doubt the contrast between Governor Evers, who believes in democracy, believes in making government work for people, honestly is a dedicated public servant, has been throughout his career as a teacher, a school administrator and superintendent, and then head of the Department of Public Instruction. And so he does it for all the right reasons, as opposed to folks who are entirely political animals that are about power, who will say anything to get power. Because you listen to Mr. Michaels, Ms. Clayfish, or Mr. Nicholson, it's wild stuff. It's not evidence-based. They'll say anything. I mean, Tim Michaels has an ad where he says about attacking immigrants. I mean, this is a nation of immigrants. demagoguing and demonizing them, and says that he's not being racist. You have to say that in your 30-second ad, Earl. You were probably being racist, right? Can you imagine saying, let me say this, and it's not racist to say it. Who says that in a paid ad in heavy rotations with hundreds of thousands of dollars behind it? They cannot be trusted not only not to devastate the state, loot it, and give the money to the folks doing the best, especially the largest, most profitable corporations in this country, in this state, who, by the way, since they're publicly traded companies and capital is fungible, are very free to invest the money in other states, right? The capital doesn't necessarily even stay here or benefit Wisconsin. But then you have to think about the threat, the health of democracy, the threat to it and the health of it, as you started the show with, Earl, because Wisconsin was one of the places where Donald Trump tried to steal the election, right, where there were fake electors who met in secret at the Capitol and notarized fake documents that were sent to Congress claiming to represent the state of Wisconsin and its voters when the voters had voted for Joe Biden, not Donald Trump. Will they, working with a Republican legislature, if Donald Trump, as he wants to do, is on the ballot and there's a close election in 2024, do this for real? Was that a test run? It's a existential threat to democracy to allow any of those three people to be in the governor's seat in 2024.
You know, when you hear Rebecca Clefish say, I'm not going to back down from anybody, I'm going to stand my ground, doesn't matter whether the ground she's standing is the truth or not, she's not going to even hear any debate about the position she takes, because that's who she is. She acts as though she's entitled to the position of the governorship of this state. And then you listen to Tim Michaels, who, you know, you've heard time and time again that, you know, because somebody's a business person with no political acumen at all, that he somehow is going to be a better governor because he's a business person. Well, you know, if people give that some thought, you would realize that's what Donald Trump said. Well, I'm a business guy, and, you know, we're business people, and so we know how to run government. Where is that written at, Dr. Craig? Where are the examples of where, even though that's happened many times now and more it's happening in this country, where business people step up to run government with no governmental background? How is that good?
Well, I mean, I have respect for people who are able to do things well, including build up businesses. By the way, we have no real standard for assessing how effective a business people they are, other than they're rich, right? And we certainly have, so we just say they're in business. Okay, this person's in government, so they're qualified. We don't say that, right? No one's universally qualified just because they come from a certain sector, right? But then the second thing is, it's a different job, because in business, particularly since the 1980s, when corporate responsibility was redefined and limited, the goal is to make money, period. It is not about acting in the common interest. It is not about dealing with the conflicting, you know, there's going to be conflicting rights, conflicting demands of different groups. And it is a real art to figure out what is the best way forward for the state that benefits the most people and is fair and equitable. And none of that is a skill set that is required in order to be successful running a construction company. It just isn't, okay? So it's just a misunderstanding And part of it is this kind of trashing of our own government. Since we want to believe the experience of government is bad, it makes you a bureaucrat or it makes you a quote-unquote politician. We're going to therefore say that wannabe politicians that are business people are somehow more qualified than anyone else. I don't think Tim Michaels is more qualified than Rebecca Clayfish because he's been running a business when she's been was lieutenant governor under Scott Walker, right? One can be more qualified than the other, but it has nothing to do with his, whatever his business acumen may or may not be. For all I know, it could be like Donald Trump, who according to some analyses, actually has been such an unsuccessful businessman that the fortune he got from his father would be worth more now if it would, had just been parked in investments.
In other words,
he's lost money.
You know, Dr. Craig, we got that same thing from Ron Johnson, right? He's a great businessman. Let's run Ron Johnson. We've seen Ron Johnson. Didn't know him as a businessman, but we certainly know him as an elected official, and he's been horrendous.
Yeah, he is living proof, Earl.
We don't need another one of those guys.
Right, that being a businessman does not guarantee competence in government, because we haven't even begun to list all the amazing, shocking things and statements Senator Johnson has made. But I'll say this, none of these candidates are fact-based. I mean, I'll give you an example. Rebecca Clayfish put campaign money into a recall election in a Republican area, the Mequon-Themesville School District, right? Very wealthy and Republican area, to recall school board members, supposedly because they were advancing critical race theory in the schools. And we know that is a made-up issue. Critical race theory, and I've read critical race theory, is a perfectly respectable doctrine, an academic approach from the legal profession on how to look at history and law. It is not taught to our kids. It was turned into kind of a code word for teaching them bad things parents don't want white kids to know about race, which it's not critical race theory. And believe you me, nothing like that is going on in the Mequon-Themesville School District. It's absurd. I mean, it's a completely made up fear tactic. And she did it in order to rev up parents and try to build up her governor's campaign, because it worked in Virginia in that governor's race in November, and it totally failed. And none of the school board members were recalled. She was overwhelmingly, basically opposed by the Republican voters in that district in that school board election.
You know, Dr. Craig, we just get to a point where the battle continues. Battle is not ever going to end. When we come back from the break, and I guess we got a minute or so, we can begin it. You guys are organizing heavily all over the state. This is going to be a major fight, a major battle, Pier 6 brawl, if you will. When we come back, I want you to talk about the organizing that is going on with Citizen Action and what others can do in this listening audience, and why it's so important that they join in this battle and in this fight. If you'll be so kind as to do that, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Dr. Robert Craig is on the air, Executive Director of Citizen Action. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. On the line, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. You know, Dr. Craig, before we went to break, I thought it'd be important in this last segment that you talk about citizen action, organizing, what it's going to take to win this at this critical juncture, both on the state and the national level.
So the only thing that matches organized money, and that's what we're up against here. There is a great deal of money in politics now. It is what you would call interested money, right? It comes from big, greedy, special interests, corporate interests that are trying to rig, and from billionaires to rig the system to their advantage. The eight billionaires in Wisconsin, there are only eight of them, have had their net worth increase 50% during the pandemic, and they're not, and they don't pay the same kind of taxes, even remotely what average working people and middle class people pay, for example, and that's because they have rigged the system with money. But the only answer to that is organized people. And so we have membership chapters we call organizing co-ops all around the state, including one, the Southeast Wisconsin Organizing Co-op, which folks in the suburban areas and at Waukesha, et cetera, I know you're broadcasting from Waukesha, can join. We're also building a new chapter, Northside Rising Co-op in the north side of Milwaukee, for any of your listeners from your neighborhood, Earl. And then we have them spread around the state, and members are involved in things like our endorsement. We had a big candidate forum for the open congressional seat in western Wisconsin, the third congressional district, where the district overlaps with three of our organizing co-ops. So our members were asking questions of all four of the leading candidates. And we did the same that U.S. Senate primary, where we endorsed Mandela Barnes. Now, we don't just organize to join, and people can go to citizenactionwi.org to get information, or, of course, just talk to an organizer. So you can connect that way and decide whether you want to get involved. And also, our Facebook page is extremely active. So if you just follow us or like us on Facebook, you'll see a lot of information, opportunities to get involved. But I would say we do it around issues, Earl. It's around getting people together to work together, to get the skills to work together and be effective. But it's then to actually advance our society, and we want to guarantee healthcare is a fundamental right and make it affordable, which includes huge inflation issues like prescription drug prices, where there's no excuse other than big pharma has rigged our system, that we have the most expensive prescription drugs in the world by far, even though we have paid to develop, our government has, our tax dollars have. Most of those drugs, and all the basic development behind them, we're allowing pharma to price gouge us, big pharma, the drug companies, and that same is true with health insurance premiums and medical costs in general. As I said, we really do have a 6-year deadline now, 8-year deadline to cut greenhouse emissions in half, or we're going to have runaway climate change, which will be the most destructive thing, the most threatening thing to the species in our whole history, in the history of civilization. But we can do it in a way that actually creates a much more vibrant, a much more open economy, and one that lifts all boats, not just a few boats. And one thing we're going to start working on, Earl, and we work with this on these issues at the state level, at the federal level, and at the local level. So we get involved directly in local organizing as well on these issues. Earl, we're going to be leaning in on another thing that President Biden is very serious about, the first president in decades to be serious about this. That is really redoing our tax system to make it fairer and asking the billionaires to pay their fair share. President Biden, Governor Evers and President Biden, a little freeform, Earl. He supports a billionaire's tax that says you can hire all the accountants you want and find every loophole possible, but you're still going to pay 20% tax rate. And you're going to pay something on your assets, too, because one of the things billionaires do never to pay taxes is they never realize their gains. That is, if you don't cash out the stock, you don't cash out the investment, you don't pay a tax on it until you do that. And if you don't need it to live on, in fact, you can borrow if you have to, if you have that kind of assets, then you just save it for future generations. And we're not talking about just one generation. This is someone who's a billionaire probably has guaranteed seven generations a secure lifestyle. It never taxed. All of our income is taxed because predominantly our income comes from work, and that's taxed. But investment gains are not until you realize them, and even then they're taxed at a lower rate. So that I think we have reason to believe that if we actually act on real inflationary issues like healthcare, prescription drugs, and if we actually go and ask billionaires to pay their fair share, that these are wildly popular issues, and these can all this can turn the 2022 elections around. Actually,
you know, Dr. Craig, with all that you just articulated, if you just looked at it from the perspective of money in politics, and we know that that's there, and barring some unforeseen circumstances, that's not going to be turned around. The only options we have are organizing, right? I mean, what other options do we have?
We have no other option at all. None. In other words, if we can let the system be dominated by those who have money, and it is dominated in their interest, or we can actually make government work for everyone. And this is an ultimate test of democracy. Democracy is more than voting. It was always intended to be more than voting. It is about people coming together in their communities, getting involved directly, having collective power, making sure government is held accountable. If we don't hold government accountable, it will be captured by those with money, those who can employ legions of lobbyists, like the several thousand lobbyists, and these are all expensive lobbyists, combing Congress to try to make sure that prescription drug companies can get unlimited monopolies for drugs we paid to produce, to invent, and to develop, and then charge us double, triple what they charge in other countries that actually use the leverage of the government to negotiate for fair prices or require the prices be paid. In fact, what we can do, and the government has the full power to do this, we should actually be suspending the patents of companies that price gouge for life-saving medications. Because, do you know, a lot of people die from a completely preventable and manageable illness like diabetes because insulin, which is the same drug for decades, it is not advanced, suddenly they've raised the price by over 100% the last decade because they can, and people, diabetics are skipping their insulin regimen.
You know, Dr. Craig, I talk about those kinds of things all of the time, and the American people, and the fact that as you so aptly stated, if the American people really understood what happens with the medications, they clearly go all over the world and give away medications to other nations, and that we can't get here that they charge overwhelming prices for, and we just aren't aware of it. Dr. Craig, I really appreciate it. Got to get you back more. I promise that I'll do that. We've got to go to a break. But thank you very much. We'll have you back and again and again and again. I promise you. It's always great to have you on. See you later.
Always a pleasure, Erlen. We have a big announcement next Thursday. I'll let you know.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye. All right. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back.